There's something unnerving about a dead-end street, nagging. Not a tidy cul-de-sac, but the abrupt termination of a neighborhood that seems hungry for more histories. It speaks of speechlessness, of botched promises. The language on reflective signs furnishes even the pre-literary mind with larger meaning. It might as well read, "One day you'll die." Such a sign held vigil at the end of Applewood Lane when you were a kid. Each summer, its orange and white bars were swallowed further and further by the vegetation, a humanoid figure trying and slowly failing to brace a door against forces that would enter. But nature was no match for the reckless sneakers and huffy tires that maintained an intricate system of paths in the wilderness beyond the dead end. Its clearings were baseball fields, its trees fort foundations and bone breakers, its pitiful creek the site of early experiments in hydroengineering, its secluded areas later a haven for bonfires and other experiments, venues for Eli to show and tell.
You're having fun, aren't you, with these stories? Because, you know, they're, I guess some people have referred to them as experimental. When you look through this collection, Makeshift, some of them read like a play, others like prose poems or flash fiction. How do you describe this collection?
I'd say strange would be my number one word. You know, we could say experimental, innovative, strange. Some of them are much more traditional, though. You know, these stories were written over the course of 10 years. I mean, it takes a long time to get a book published. So I changed a lot as a writer and as a person over those 10 years. So the trick with publishing a book like this is you have this big range of different types of stories. How do you try to make them cohere?
I'm wondering if stories are making something of a comeback, if that's a fair way to put it. Traditionally, they don't seem to be as good sellers as novels. And yet I'm seeing a lot of excellent collections come out, yours included. What is your view on that, on stories versus novels? And congratulations, by the way, because you have a novel coming out very soon, too.
I do have a novel. Yeah, that's a whole nother beast. Maybe we have the internet, strangely, to blame, sort of renaissance in stories that we know that we have a decreased sense of ability to focus on a longer text, perhaps. So we're accustomed for reading shorter and shorter things. So not just the story, but certainly flash fiction. So our busy lives and the way that the internet divides our attention constantly makes rooms for shorter forms to sort of make that comeback. I think you're absolutely right.
Compare that experience and feel free to give us a little teaser about, is it Driftless Quintet, the novel?
That's right. A very different type of story than maybe anything that's happening in this short story collection, except perhaps I do have one hockey story in Makeshift. It's called, I should know the name of my own story probably. It's a long one, and its title changed just before the publication. The Unquestionable Sincerity of Fire Alarms, which is sort of drawn from my youth hockey experience playing in Northern Illinois and Southern Wisconsin when we would go for these hockey tournaments and kind of lay waste to entire hotels. So this this novel is, it's a hockey book. It's a sports book. It started off, I was in a workshop with the great writer Stephen Graham Jones, and we were reading a bunch of really plotty books, maybe less experimental. We were reading some Megan Abbott books, one about cheerleading and then one about gymnastics. And I thought, you know, I could do something like that with hockey. It's one of the things that, you know, I've been focused on for a long time. So it starts off kind of as this fast-paced, plotty sports book, almost a YA book. But then because my brain does weird things to stories, it veers and becomes a stranger, more experimental text, which becomes about sort of sports culture, eugenics, becomes almost a cult novel, and about sort of like the relationship between sports and race issues in America. So it becomes about something very different than just a plot-driven hockey book.
Should Red Wings fans be picking this up?
Oh, I would hope so. You know, my home is in Michigan now, but I grew up near Chicago. So I grew up hating the Red Wings and cheering for the Blackhawks. And then when I moved here, I thought, you know, I don't want to be a wet rag on my hometown, so, or my home state. So I decided I would cheer for the Red Wings unless they were playing the Blackhawks But then they moved conferences, so now they're not quite as big of rivals, which is very convenient for me.
So right now you're working in Interlaken, aren't you? You're teaching up there, creative writing. Tell us a little bit about your work in Interlaken and previously Eastern Michigan University. And then I want to ask you about a prison program that you were teaching writing in also. So you've got some interesting teaching experiences.
Yeah, a big variety of experiences. I came to Interlaken Arts Academy, which is a boarding school in northern Michigan, the Lower Peninsula, for high schoolers in all, various artistic disciplines. In 2017, I came as a visiting instructor, and I kind of stuck around. And just since June 1st, I've been the director of creative writing at the Interlaken Center for the Arts. So that includes teaching. Certainly, I teach fiction and nonfiction, and I teach a lot of innovative experimental classes like hybrid genres, and I have a class next year called Writing About Music. And then as an administrator, I'm doing a lot of hiring, evaluating. I have the joyful task of bringing in a lot of really talented visiting writers to campus to work with the high schoolers. This summer, we had Laura Kaziski and Asia Gable, who are both amazing. So I came to Interlaken after my third year of my PhD program at the University of Utah. Technically, I still need to finish. I need to go back and defend. That will happen soon. But I came here in 2017 because I saw that opportunity. Before doing my PhD, I actually tried out an MFA in music composition, moved to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a week before Katrina hit, which was kind of a misadventure, to say the least, and then kind of went in the direction of creative writing. I got my master's and taught adjunct for five total years at Eastern Michigan University, which was a wonderful experience. It really changed my life as a writer. I went in writing pretty traditional short stories, and I came out writing books like Makeshift. So it was a big blessing in my life, and part of my experience there was getting to work in the Women's Huron Valley Correctional Facility in Southeast Michigan, leading writing workshop classes. So that was a super real event. These are people who don't have a lot of these types of opportunities in their lives, and it changes the sense of urgency and joy and exigency when you go back into a college classroom or a high school classroom, knowing the big stakes, that we're not here just to hang out, that some people, the experience is so vital to them. So it was an important experience in my life. Actually, for 4 years during undergrad, I also volunteered in a prison weekly at the Minnesota Correctional Facility in St. Cloud, which is a maximum security prison up there, playing the piano for religious services, among other things. So it's been a blessing to be able to do that type of work.
Good for you. I have a lot of respect for that. And I would think also in the Women's Correctional Facility that, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these women have gone through domestic violence and different kinds of violence in their lives and somehow ended up in crimes. I would think the writing for them must be very therapeutic.
Indeed. And we saw a few different approaches to it. Some of the women in this case wanted to make sense of what had happened to them. So they were definitely invested in writing about their life situations. And then on the other hand, a lot of the women wanted to write everything except that. So it was more of an escape. So we tried to provide any range of opportunities between those two things, of course.
You have a strong interest in music, too. It shows up here and there, sometimes forefront, sometimes background of your stories as well. Talk about music in your life.
It's been real important to me. I played piano from a young age, did not practice very much as a kid, unfortunately. So it wasn't until high school. I was on a trip. We were going through the Alps one night in a bus, and the movie Amadeus was on, and we were going to go to Austria the next day. And so that was, I don't even really think I knew classical music existed until then, even though I'd been playing piano for a while. So I fell in love with it. Went to college where I majored in music composition and tried to become a pianist to limited success. And then, I did try to go do an MFA in music composition. And, part of me felt like a little bit of a failure when I left that experience. But now I'm in a situation both as a teacher and an artist where I'm seeing that all of these diverse interests, I'm also very into filmmaking, are complementing one another. And that's become the sort of basis of my academic studies and artistic practices, that the sort of merging of various art forms into works that are maybe unclassifiable, that defy categorization, and to really in an academic setting to make sure we're doing a lot of interdisciplinary work to show that the divisions that we draw up between music and writing and visual art are not necessarily natural. They're things that have come about for a variety of reasons. In an academic setting, it really shows how important it is that we need to be doing interdisciplinary work, that these divisions that we draw up between music and writing and visual art, that they're not natural, but that they come about for a variety of reasons. The ancient Greeks, you know, just said poetry and they kind of meant everything, and I envy them a little bit for that.
Good point. Fugitive Traces, that's a music album, yes?
It is indeed. This is something I made while I was at Eastern Michigan, partly in line with my interest in filmmaking that I mentioned before. I got obsessed with the films of Werner Herzog, who has a very questionable artistic practices, but they're still amazing films. And I would often put them on in the background while I was cleaning or cooking or whatever. And I would put the director's commentary on because he has this amazing German accent and he says outrageous things. So his words, his director's commentary really worked its way into my brain. And I started realizing that I could appropriate content from that and mix it up, collage it in a variety of ways. And then I started setting music to it, my own compositions, as well as some friends that I collaborated with, rock and roll music, electronic music, and classical chamber music. So that album has been, it's one of the wilder things I've created. And it also has a digital sort of chapbook that goes along with it. And one of the things that chapbook does is it documents various conflicts that happened when I was trying to film my own first film, a horror film called Silo, a short film that I shot just before I entered Eastern Michigan. So it's one of these projects that's kind of unclassifiable that brings writing and music and filmmaking all into one place.
You do indeed have a wide range. It's interesting listening to this. I'm wondering if you've ever done an author's reading with music in the background? Ever thought about doing that?
Yeah, I have done that. Mm. Sometimes I do performances of these Fugitive Traces pieces. So I will take the Werner Herzog audio and play that over speakers. And then I will play a keyboard. Or last time I did it, I actually had access to a Celeste, a sort of bell piano, which was really cool. I played it during a faculty reading here at Interlaken. And one of the Interlaken students, the cellist, played with me. So I've done some live readings of these things with music.
Oh, I love that. You're coming to Michigan News Agency here very shortly for an event. Any plans of bringing music to that? Or
I've done readings of the first story in Makeshift, in which I've played snippets of the Brahms intermezzo that the story is about between the sections. There's a possibility of that, but I'd have to figure out the logistics of making it work.
So back to the experimental fiction idea, you know, when you talk about experiments in science, there's a hypothesis and then you go about trying to prove it. Is that similar in fiction when you write something? Is there something you're trying to test to prove?
That's a great question. There's a group of writers that I really admire from France in the 60s and 70s called the Oulipo writers. And that's a shortened version of the French phrase for workshop of potential literature, which is not normally what we think of doing. We're not here to write potential literature, we're here to write literature. But that's exactly how they thought of it. They imposed a lot of constraints upon themselves. What happens if I try to write a novel without using the letter E, which is even harder in French than it is in English? So they were these mad scientists of writers that would treat their stories almost like a laboratory. And sometimes that's how I feel. Sometimes I go into things not knowing any kind of destination and seeing what happens along the way. Driftless Quintet was written very much like that. Other things are much more planned, leaving much less up to chance, but always creating room for that sort of spontaneous effect can be a goal of mine, because it's harder to do improvisation on the page than it is in music, but I'm always looking for chances to do that.
To kind of follow up on that, when I was looking online for a little background on you, I found that someone had made a dress out of makeshift.
This has been one of the greatest blessings of my life. I wouldn't have even dreamed of this being a possibility. I wouldn't have known to dream of it. So my press, Saraband, who I love, they're based in Louisville, Kentucky. They're having their 25th anniversary this year. Every year in Louisville, Kentucky, there's a fashion show put on by the KMAC Contemporary Art Museum right there on Main Street. They shut it down. They have a fashion show in these tents. It's called KMAC Couture. And so for the 25th anniversary, Saraband commissioned Andrea Hansen, an amazing gown designer, to design a gown based off of my book, Makeshift. So the bodice is made of the front and back cover that's sort of cut into strips and braided together. The dress is made of pages of the book that have been cut into feather shapes and redacted, blackout poetry of my pages on these feathers and makeup. I was talking to the hair and makeup designer, and they were telling me how the hair and makeup was even based on the book, which was really cool to hear.
I want to hear about that. How do you do makeup to correlate with a book?
I was so dazzled, I have trouble remembering exactly. There were these threads that were going through Andrea's hair, and they were supposed to be like the ribbons of random junk or something that might get caught on, let's say, a barbed wire fence like is on the cover of my book. So that was the only specific that I remember from the hair. But it was a truly magical experience, and I'll never forget it.
Well, we thank you very much, Joe, for coming by to talk with us. And hopefully everybody will come out and hear you at Michigan News Agency.
I hope so, too. Thanks so much, Santa.